You're listening to Play It Again, Swig. I'm Jocelyn Swigger, and I'm trying to learn all the Chopin etudes. I'm also trying to balance hanging out with my toddler, teaching full-time, and life's other distractions. This is my audio diary of that process. Well, it's Friday, June 22nd, and I think I'm going to sort of philosophize at you quite a bit today, rather than playing a lot of piano, like really specific nitty-gritty practicing stuff. So I went last weekend to my Oberlin Conservatory reunion. It was a reunion just for conservatory people, and so it was all years, but specifically for people in the con, as we called it. And that was really, 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 really interesting in some ways that I haven't finished unpacking yet, but I'm going to try and unpack a little bit of that with you here. So one of the things that really struck me, first of all, I heard some fantastic music, like just gorgeous, gorgeous playing. It was so beautiful and gorgeously phrased, and the sound was great, and the articulation was great, and really, really exciting musical weekend. But I also did a little bit of practicing in the practice rooms, which was hilarious because they're exactly the same as when I was a student. And I think actually the furniture is literally the same furniture that was there when I was a student. And it was so funny to walk into that practice room and kind of feel anxiety seeping from the walls. And that sounds a little darker than I mean it to, actually. But there was such a feeling the whole time when I was getting my education at both Oberlin and Eastman. You know, these are both really high power schools, and there were all these really fantastic players there. And there was always kind of a feeling that, oh, well, I snuck in and I'm working really hard to try and be mediocre, but the people who are really good are really, really good, and there's no chance for me to be one of the really good people. So I'm just going to try and do my best to be one of the second tier people. And like thinking about even that clear of a hierarchy is of course ridiculous and not really helpful. But you know, just thinking about like my schools have graduated people who win multiple Grammys and have these huge careers and can play things that for me are very difficult with just the greatest of ease. And then, of course, there also are a lot of people who are kind of out there in the trenches teaching and making music and thinking about things and trying to get better. And so I'm mostly in my life, I'm pretty at peace with where I am. I mean, this project, learning these etudes, is so much about becoming a better artist and a better musician and a better pianist. But it's not really about, like, catapulting me to the top tier and winning Grammys. Like, that's not, I'm not trying to get to international stardom here. I'm just trying to be a better artist. But it was really interesting to be in this practice room with, like, the brown carpeted walls and to remember the feeling of competition. And I think in some ways that's really, really, really healthy. You know, to feel like, well, gosh, these other people can play all these things and it's normal for them to be able to play these things really well. So I better work really hard because it's hard for me. Now, of course, part of what happens is that a lot of times some of these things are hard for everybody, even if they seem to be easy. So that's another important thing. But I think the main thing that I often am good at, but right now I'm struggling with a little bit, is that we really are only in competition with ourselves, right? I mean, sometimes that's not true. Sometimes we're in actual competition for concerts or jobs or whatever. But in terms of like the day-to-day learning the music, trying to be a better artist, there's really nobody that I'm in competition with but myself. And I think that's a much healthier way of looking at things because, for one thing, my notion of what's acceptable keeps receding. For example, right now I'm working on just learning the notes and figuring out even what the patterns are for 25-8, which is this one. Oops. I'm doing this by memory, which I'm not really ready to do. Okay, so by no measure is that ready to play for anybody except for you, my poor long-suffering practice buddy. But it is an improvement from where it was a couple of weeks ago because I actually am starting to kind of wrap my head around it. So if I compete with myself, then that's actually kind of going okay, and I'm enjoying working on it, which is much better than just dreading it and being drenched with fear when I think about it, which is what was kind of happening before. So I feel like I need to find my way back to being clearly in competition with myself in the past, even if it's myself in the past 2 weeks ago, rather than beating myself up because I'm not various exciting fancy pianists with huge careers that I don't have. And I'm just not naming names because I don't want to name drop, or it's not even about who they are, but I'm, it's easy to get caught up in this idea of success as being this external thing with recognition. And I just need to let that go and be happy that some things are better than they were, even if they're not anywhere near where I want them to be. So let me give you an example of a way that I've been a little bit crazy about that lately, even before I went to this reunion. And then I'm going to switch gears and tell you about one cool thing that I got out of the reunion. There are lots of cool things that I got out of the reunion, but one specific thing that I think is going to be germane to this project. Okay, so I'm going to now play a little bit more. So Opus 10, number 8. All right, this thing. This is going to be slow. The end wasn't good, but the rest was actually not terrible. But my God, I've been working myself to death on this thing. I've been so OCD about this. So I've been really trying to, and I've talked about this, I know, over the last few weeks. So if you're tired of hearing about it, believe me, I'm getting tired of thinking about it in some ways. I mean, I do think it's getting better, but okay. So we have all these notes. This is all the right hand, right? And I'm really working on making my articulation good and my timing clear. So I don't want it to sound, let me do like a worst case scenario. Right, I don't want it to sound like that. Right, I want it to sound really nice and clear like that, but then of course faster. Not bad. Okay, but the thing is, so the first measure I've been practicing a lot and that's getting better. That was what I just played. But the next couple of bars, so instead of it being all white keys, which is very nice, we have this pesky little B flat, which just kind of changes the geography just enough that it makes it a little bit harder, and suddenly I just feel like I don't know what I'm doing. So this, suddenly that feels really hard. And, you know, I've been practicing this way a lot, which is helping, right? That sounds better. And then, of course, you also have to go up. Sometimes my thumb feels really big, which means that was better. Anyway, so I've been sort of obsessively working on like the first six or so bars of this piece. And with some effect, right? Like the articulation is getting better. I think empirically it's getting better. It's not where I want it. It's not easy. It doesn't happen every time. Like I'm not to the point where I can just sit down and play this thing and count on the articulation being good. Really, I'm more to the point where I can sort of sit down and play this thing and maybe 5 out of 8 times the articulation will be good. So I need to get my percentages better. Let me tell you a little bit about a really cool musical thing specifically from the Oberlin Reunion. David Brightman is the, oh, I said I wasn't going to name drop, but that's right. David Brightman is the chair of historical performance there. So looking at old instruments and really studying all the information we have about how the composers really wanted their music played, whether it's looking at autographs or really trying to decipher what's in the score. And I had lunch with him and he said, you know, I have a piano that's pretty interesting. I think you might like to check out. So he has this new piano, which is an 1860s Broadwood. Now, Broadwood was an English piano at the time of Chopin. Chopin died in 1849, but this would have been fairly close to his lifetime. I think reasonably close to what he would have played. So apparently Chopin described Broadwood as the English Pleyel, and Pleyel and Erard were his two favorite French pianos. And I've only played a Pleyel for like 2 seconds, and I got to play this Broadwood for just 20 minutes or so. We had a little impromptu lesson. And I'm definitely going to go back and play on this piano more because I just felt like I need to spend a weekend practicing on it. So I'm going to make that happen. But I wanted to report to you a couple of things about it that were sort of interesting and maybe a little bit counterintuitive. A couple of things that were not so surprising is that the key bed dip was a little bit shallower than what it is on the modern piano. So when you press a key down, your finger physically goes down less far. The other thing is that the keys are just a smidgen narrower, like just a tiny, 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 tiny bit. We actually got out a tape measure, and I think it was about a centimeter per octave. So from here to here, and I don't mean a centimeter. I totally don't mean a centimeter. Oh my God, that would be huge. I mean a millimeter per octave. So from here to here, just a millimeter closer, it felt like things were just fitting under my hands much easier. So like 10 number one. It just felt a little bit easier, which of course is really nice with that one because it's so much about stretching. So that was much easier, which was really, really nice. And then of course it's a little depressing that this is what it is, this modern piano that I've got. But a couple of other things that were really interesting about it. Now, I don't know if this is because the piano is about 150 years old. It may not have been originally designed this way, but the keys felt a teeny, teeny, teeny bit, and these are like really subtle gradations that I'm talking about, but the keys felt a teeny, teeny, teeny bit wobbly, like from the left to the right. Like if you jiggle a key, obviously you don't want it to jiggle at all, right? Or maybe not, obviously. I'm used to keys that don't jiggle very much from the left to the right when you play them. But I felt like the keys jiggled very, very subtly, just a little bit from the left to the right when I put them down. And it kind of gave me less space to hide. Like one of the places, and so it made some things harder to play on rather than easier. So like 25 number 6, this one. This, on the modern piano, I sort of feel like I'm walking on solid ground. And on that one, it felt like I was walking on, I don't know, slippery rocks, or it just felt a little scarier. Now, my guess is that if I were to practice that etude on the old piano and then come back to the modern piano, it would be much, much easier on the modern piano, which would probably be really cool. That one's not on the front burner particularly right now for me, but that was kind of an interesting thing to go, oh, the modern piano is actually helping me here. And then the big thing that was a really, really, really big surprise for me is that the ring was much longer than I thought it was going to be. With, you know, if you play like a, right, this ring. So now on the modern piano, like it's decaying, it's still going to go for a long time. But on the, I guess my sort of intuitive feeling from having played just a little bit on some of the older pianos is that they tend to have a ring that lasts much less long. So if you play like on a Mozart-ish piano, the ring is going to vanish much sooner. So it'll be more like, that's a big exaggeration, but just to give you an idea that instead of the sound hanging out forever and it would still go, 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 it's more like, I'm trying to wobble my foot. Anyway, a little bit like that. But so I was expecting to have a much shorter ring on this piano, and actually the ring was a little bit longer, and the decay of the sound of the note was not as fast as I expected. And so what that meant was in places like, well, I was just trying to play, this is 10 number 9. That you could actually lift up the pedal a little bit earlier. This is something I'm going to have to think about a lot and go back and look at that piano and look at my scores a little bit more, because I haven't been thinking about pedal at all lately because I've been so obsessive about finger articulation. But I'm totally making that up. That you could actually have a little bit of space and the ring, just sort of the sound keeping going, would give you this really nice cushion so that instead of the sound stopping completely like it does there, there was like a little bit of a shadow in it. I don't know if I'm explaining that very well. And in case you're wondering why that was, it was because the upper reaches of the piano, I think they went down to, I'm totally making this up, I don't know where it was exactly, but I think that the dampers stopped like here or so. So you had all of this overtone spinning up at the top. Anyway, was really, really cool to play on the piano. And one of the things I can take from that back to my practice now, on, of course, the modern piano, just from the experience of it, is it was a really good wake-up call that I have totally not been thinking about these pieces musically in the last few weeks, because I've been so obsessive about mechanics and just figuring out what on earth I'm doing to get to make the notes even happen, right? So, for example, I've been driving myself crazy, as you know, if you've been listening to this for a while, with this one, 10 number 2. So that wasn't perfect, but that gives you an idea of what it was. But I think that had a little bit of shape, and I haven't been thinking about shape because I've been so focused on getting every single hand position exactly where I want it, right? Instead of thinking about the music. Now, you might notice that when I say, now I'm thinking about the music, one of the things that automatically happens is I start using the pedal. And that was not careful, thoughtful pedaling. That was based on what Chopin has done and also on what I think is going to sound the best. I was just kind of putting my foot up and down instinctively and randomly. I mean, not totally randomly, right? Because I've been playing piano a long time. But you know what I mean? Just sort of following my instincts. But I think I need to make sure that my practice is including some moments of just sort of throwing caution to the winds and thinking about phrasing. Because it can get a little soulless otherwise. And I think it's really important for me to do this work about the articulation. Do you know what I mean? Like, I really want to be able to do that. But I think maybe it's really important for me once in a while to just go, you know what? That would have been so nice if I hadn't messed up the 5 chord. Anyway, I think I need to be doing a little bit more of that. So with that in mind, this coming week, I really need to get Opus 10 to the point where I can play through it. I'd like to be playing. I'm going to start doing concerts in really super low pressure environments like retirement homes and things in the fall. But I want to get Opus 10 to where I can play it memorized, even if it's under tempo and even if there are holes and mistakes, but where I can at least play through all of Opus 10. So I'm going to try and be able to do that for next week. I'm not necessarily going to make you sit through listening to that, but I will report to you next Friday whether or not I can do it, and I'll probably play some of it for you. So I think I'm going to try and pull my lens out this week a little bit. And maybe let Opus 10 number 8, this one, the one I just played, maybe just let it chill out for a little bit. I'm also going to let 10 number 2 chill out a little bit. Because I just need to think about other things. So my plan for next week is I am going to be able to play through Opus 10. So just to give you like the little teeny bits of things. Number 1... Number 2, number 3, number 4, that's one I need to actually get all obsessive about the articulation for, but I'm not going to do that this week. Number 5, that's another one I need to get all obsessive about the articulation, but I'm not going to do it this week. Number 6, I'm giving myself permission to use the music for this week because the chromatics get really crazy. Number 7, which I totally can't play yet, but I'm working on memorizing. Make you listen to any more of that, but I have been working on. So forth, 10 number 8, I just played 350 50,000 times this thing. Number 9. which I think I need to just really think about phrasing a lot for that one. Number 10, which is still really new, so I need to memorize this, and I think memorizing the articulation might drive me nuts, but I'll report to you about that later. I totally made up what the articulation was, but that's okay. And so forth. 10 number 11, which is definitely going to be under tempo next week, but that's just the way it is. I'm trying to memorize it. So the way I've been practicing this one actually is to do the first beat and then try to memorize the next measure at a time. And think about it. And then think about it. I would need to do that one again, but anyway, that's the idea. And then number 12, which is of course this one. So forth. So I want to be able to play through all of those, not just the beginning, next week. And then 25, Opus 25, I'm learning number 8. And I'm starting to learn, I've been starting for a couple of weeks to learn the skeleton of number 10. Which I'm not even going to think about trying to play near tempo yet. But I've really been doing more like, I'm sort of making this up. I'm totally not ready to play this by memory. Anyway, I've been doing sort of a skeleton version of that. I may let those two Opus 25 ones go for this week, trying to get Opus 10 into something doable. So that is my plan for this week. And that's it. You can follow me on Twitter at Jocelyn Spigger. You could like my Facebook page, which I would love. If you want to know more about this project, you can go to playitagainswig.com. I'd love it if you have questions or comments. And thank you so much for being my practice buddy. Dad, 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 dad